Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for being with us this week. On this week's program, we'll hear from Annie Rouse, founder of Friends of Hemp. She's been a longtime hemp proponent and is currently based in Colorado. Annie, thanks for being with us. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, great. Thanks for joining us. And as we speak, I know you are out in Denver, Colorado. I'm sure this time of year is beautiful in Denver.
It's very beautiful. Sun's out. I actually just moved here several months ago, actually the day quarantine started.
No kidding.
But it's pretty much been sunny every day I've been here, so I'm liking it so far.
Wow, that's great. Well, you can't beat that. And what made you decide to move to Denver?
Just trying to figure out where I would like to place myself since I work remotely. I have the flexibility to live in anywhere that I want to. And so my boyfriend and I ended up just hitting the road at the beginning of January and are living in different cities for short periods of time. COVID has kind of gotten in the way of that a little bit, but, you know, we haven't really gotten the true Colorado experience. But hopefully I know that things are starting to open up now. So hopefully we'll be able to get that true experience that we wanted.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, there's something about that nomad existence that everybody craves and only a few get to do.
Yeah, we're liking it so far.
Now, Annie, tell us before we get to Friends of Hemp. I know you're heavily involved in the hemp industry, and that includes part of your traveling. You're from the Midwest, so let's go back to the Midwest. Start there and tell us how you went from the Midwest to Colorado. But I know that involves the hemp industry, so let's weave all that in there together and give us a bit of a timeline of how you ended up where you are.
Yeah, so I'm actually originally from Kentucky, which I don't really consider the Midwest. I consider it more the South, or really its own territory in itself. you know, we were, you know, in between in the war and whatnot, but south of the Mason-Dixon line. So
sure. It is kind of a tweener area there.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, you type in Southeast on a map and sometimes Kentucky shows up, sometimes it doesn't. Same with typing in the Midwest. So no one really knows where it is. but I was born and raised there, went to undergraduate there, where I got my feet wet in the hemp industry back in 2009 and have not looked back since. So
well, now 2009, obviously that was way before a lot of people got involved with the 2014 and 2018 farm bill. What were you doing with hemp in 2009?
So I had written a paper in college and it sparked my interest more down the path and made me really want to change the policy, given that Kentucky was the epicenter of the hemp industry back in the prior to the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937. And it really lit a fire under me. And so I reached out to some individuals in Kentucky that I knew were proponents of legislative change, and ended up working with a group called the Kentucky Hemp Initiative. And it was a group of, you know, just a couple people in a coffee shop that would meet and talk about how we could make changes to legitimize hemp. And I ended up then moving out to California for graduate school. And, you know, every paper that I wrote was on changing the policy on hemp. I was studying environmental policy in an MBA. And then during that time, applied for a Fulbright scholarship, where I was accepted as the first and probably still the only Fulbright scholar on hemp. And so I moved up to Calgary, Canada in 2013 and was studying the environmental impact of using hemp as a building material. And after I had completed that work, the Farm Bill passed. So I moved back to Kentucky and started to participate in the Kentucky Hemp Industries Association and started a company. Well, it was really more involved in the fiber and grain side when I was in Kentucky initially, and then ended up actually getting diagnosed with Lyme disease and turned to CBD to try and help with some of the problems that I was having and coping with my health. and found, you know, a really found that it worked, but then also found some of the problems in the industry with quality controls and things like that. So I started a Navi Market with my co-founder, Jason Amatucci, and we created a Navi Market as a platform for vetted and verified CBD products that people can trust, so that an individual could come to our site and not have any concerns about the quality of a product. Instead, they just had to figure out which products that, you know, would be the best for them. So I formed that. And then simultaneously also, because I was trying to figure out, you know, how these products work and what might work best with my health, I started my own brand as well, which used to be called Nature's Hemp Oil. We just recently went through a rebrand, and it's now called Overcome, signifying, you know, what the steps that I had to take in order to overcome some of the hardships of in my health. And then at one point in the process, founded Friends of Hemp, I guess that was 2016, which was formerly the Kentucky Hemp Research Foundation. And then we ended up rebranding it to Friends of Hemp to really be a more friendly, public-facing nonprofit that could help to reinvigorate some of the industry itself, and then also help to destigmatize the plant. A lot of what we were doing early on with Friends of Hemp was one of our biggest initiatives was our local hemp foods cook-off, where we would get local chefs to cook up creative dishes using hemp, and then had a community-wide tasting. So that was kind of born around the fact that in the 1920s, caffeine was heavily stigmatized as a drug. And it wasn't until caffeine was found in soda fountains that suddenly the general public started thinking, oh, this isn't a drug. This is something we can drink on an everyday occasion. And now it's, you know, soda's like super popular, and caffeine's used by everybody probably every day, if not multiple times a day.
And so, a lot of us fight that addiction on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, definitely. So Friends of Hemp really wanted to use these hemp foods cook-offs as a way to help normalize hemp in the eyes of the public and allow people to understand that it wasn't a drug, that it was, you know, a normal food ingredient and just an everyday commodity. So we did that. We've also done hemp tap takeovers, where we got breweries to brew up creative beers and invited the public to try them. So
now, was there any during that when you talk about the food and the craft beers, things like that? What time frame was this? When was this happening?
So our hemp foods cook off. We initiated our first one in 2016, I think. And then that's been every year. This year would have been our fifth year hosting the cook-off. Of course, we're not going to be able to do it this year.
Sure.
Now, unfortunately.
Was this happening in Kentucky?
Yes, in Lexington. So the first year we hosted our own, and then the second year we partnered with Crave Food and Music Festival.
Okay.
So we went from, you know, a crowd of 200 people to a crowd of 20,000 people.
Wow. Now, so did you have any pushback at the time? This was 2016, so we hadn't even hit the 2018 Farm Bill yet.
No, I mean, Kentucky has been highly supportive of the industry, and especially the food side. You know, the FDA is all concerned about CBD and cannabinoids, but the grain it's been in our food supply since the early 90s, and that battle had really already been won. Thanks to the Hemp Industries Association and several companies like Nutiva and Dr. Bronner's that pushed it, and Manitoba Harvest that pushed it home. So the grain was never really a problem. It was interesting to see people's reactions, you know, when we would be at these events talking about hemp as a food, because most people in Kentucky and in the U.S. really prior to 2017, you said hemp and they would say, oh, like a rope.
That's exactly, you know, what they say. Yes.
Yeah. People don't think of it as a food, and they before didn't think of it as CBD or cannabinoids, you know, as a supplement. But it was a great educational experience to be able to tell these people, yeah, it is a food, and actually it's a really nutrient dense food, and you can use it as a protein supplement, or you can use it as a flour, or you can use it, sprinkle the hemp hearts on anything, or you can make milk out of it, or, you know, there's so many ways that you can use the grain. It's a market that needs to be tapped so badly.
During that time, did you obviously you were out amongst the people and you were promoting hemp. Were you also working with the legislators?
Not me so much. A lot of other people were. I mean, I would obviously, I had joined the Hemp Roundtable by 2017. So I was trying to stay in the loop in terms of legislative action. And I, of course, would email the Kentucky Department of Ag or Commissioner Quarles. And every now and then I would go to DC to do some archival research for a podcast that I have. And would, you know, pop in to see Senator Paul or Senator McConnell or some of the congressmen and just, you know, remind them that they needed to support this, but nothing heavily, not like what a lot of other people do. Like, I can't really take credit for any legislative action.
I got you. Well, everybody has their role, and that's why we like bringing people on here to find out the nuances and the things that everybody has done to contribute to being where we are today. And I want to go back to another point you made where you said that you entered the CBD side because of your health. That's not necessarily why you got involved in hemp, but you were on the industrial side for the most part, then, you know, health issues, and you turned to CBD. I'm sure you went through a lot of bad CBD, or did you? And that's what I wanted to ask.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I had initially, when I tried it, I started taking it just like a soft gel a day for 10 days. And I noticed an improvement in my energy levels. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit happier. You know, my mood had improved a little bit, it seemed. And I was able to have more mobility. I was having a lot of joint pain because of Lyme disease. And, you know, just found that, like maybe it was I couldn't really pinpoint if it was the inflammation or why exactly I had that more mobility. Maybe it was on my head, you know,
sure.
but I just felt better. And because I knew a lot of people in the industry, you know, a bunch of friends had sent me their products. And so, the first brand I tried, I loved it. The second brand I tried, and it was like, well, this doesn't do anything. It mm-hmm. like tastes bad. It's, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what made me really start to realize the issues that had arisen in the industry just with, you know, people making it in not, you know, in subpar conditions, people maybe not testing it. And testing today is still a big problem just because there's not, you know, a direct panel for pesticides, for instance, that every company should abide by.
Right.
And so I took those experiences, and with the knowledge that I had and the contacts that I had in the industry, that's where Anavi Market was born, which was created in order to vet and verify different CBD brands. So we have an application process, and we look at your lab tests. We look at what kinds of pesticides you're testing for. We look at where your supply chain is, who's manufacturing it, where it's being manufactured. Of course, we like to work with companies that may have a unique story as to why they got involved. You know, there's so many people that got into the industry in 2018 that just wanted to sell CBD because it was the hot new market.
Sure.
And you know, we like to work with companies that have a real mission behind them as well as the quality control. So, I mean, it's hard to say what exactly it didn't work because it was just, you know, I it felt different than the mm-hmm. other brand. Mm-hmm. So the threshold of quality. So I kind of compared everything to then that brand.
What do you think would have happened had you tried the other brand first that was not effective?
I probably would have had a different mindset over what mm-hmm. CBD was and mm-hmm. if it was beneficial or not. You know, I might not be doing what I'm doing now. It's hard to say. I mean, it's tough when people try it, there's so much hype about CBD being a cure-all, and of course it's not a cure-all, but it does provide, and you know, I say CBD, but really I mean cannabinoids. CBD is really like a misnomer in the industry because it's just one compound in a plant that has 400.
Sure.
Well,
you know, Annie, what should people do if they know of, well, let's say they're working for a company or they just come across a company where they know the CBD quality is bad in their product? Is there anywhere they can go to, you know, for lack of better terms, turn those people in or raise the red flag?
That's a really good question. I mean, I know there's been lots of news outlets that have written about products that they've tested. You know, Amazon, I would say never buy CBD on Amazon. You will have that bad experience. Mm-hmm. And then you could try to, if you find that there's, you know, heavy metals or pesticides in your product because you've tested it, and you could try and report that to the FDA. Some people have filed class action lawsuits against companies who have been selling products that are contaminated. It just kind of depends on how contaminated or how, you know, is it a milligram off of what is specified in the bottle? That's, you know, maybe nothing to reach out to the FDA about. But if it has a bunch of contaminants in it that aren't supposed to be in there, I mean, that's a huge red flag. And depending on your resources, you could try and reach out just on Facebook and spread the word, or you could write a review on the company's page, or you can try and reach out to news sources or the FDA. You know, there's lots of different ways to get word out about that. Reddit is a really good platform for that kind of behavior.
And what would you suggest if somebody came to you and said, well, you know, let's say somebody called you from Iowa or somewhere where you're not familiar, or maybe you have been to Iowa, you've been everywhere, Annie, but, you know, if they called from somewhere where you can't say go to this place, what suggestion would you give them to purchase their CBD? What should they look for? The longevity of the company, how long they've been in business, or what would you just off the top of your head say, look into this?
So I always direct people to anavimarket.com, anavimarket.com, because we have vetted and verified about 12 different brands that we know are top quality. If you don't like to buy online, you would prefer to support a local store, then I would look for brands that are U.S. Hemp Authority certified. It is a third-party self-regulatory organization that was started in 2018. And I'm actually sitting on the board of directors now for the U.S. Hemp Authority. And it's a certification process. It's set up similar to how USDA Organic was initially set up in the, 20 years ago. And that program was initially self-regulatory, where they created standards and then they had third-party auditors that would go out to these facilities. And it was eventually adopted by the USDA. And I think eventually that'll end up having to happen with hemp in order to control what is on the shelves, especially if big box stores want to take on products and have faith that it's hemp derived and not, you know, high THC cannabis derived. And so that's one of the big things. That seal can be found on products that have that certification. You can also look for QR codes most of the time, especially somewhere like Indiana. They require that for any product that's on the shelves.
Right.
And so you can scan that QR code and see what lab tests they provide. I mean, they should be testing definitely for potency, but 100% there's 5 other tests that you should look for contaminants, which are heavy metals, pesticides, residual solvents, mycotoxins, and microbiologics. And, oh, actually there's 6. I said pesticides, didn't I? Is that the first one I said? I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
Pesticides, heavy metals, residual solvents, microbiologics, and mycotoxins.
There we go, five.
And then the 6th would be potency.
Okay.
And then terpenes, you know, that's kind of hit or miss. Some companies test, some don't. It's not the end of the world.
And what was that? What was the website again that you said you have products there that are companies and brands that have been vetted?
Yeah, it's anavimarket.com, anavimarket.com.
Okay, we encourage people to check that out and get some more information. Research is certainly important. Again, we're speaking with Annie Rouse. Annie is the founder of Friends of Hemp. We have not talked about Friends of Hemp yet, so Annie, let's go there. Tell us what Friends of Hemp is all about, what you guys are doing, and what you're hoping for in the future, some of your goals here.
Yeah, so we are a 501c3 nonprofit that was founded in 2016, and our mission is to grow the industry through education and opportunity. And so we've done a lot of campaigns in the past, like our Hemp Foods Cook-Off and Hemp Tap Takeover, which I explained earlier. But right now we have a social responsibility initiative called Hemp for Our Future. And it's a network of businesses in the hemp industry that are supporting the production of various materials, including hemp foods or topicals or other household materials that can help communities impacted by COVID. And so currently the idea for the campaign really was sparked from the Hemp for Victory campaign, mm-hmm. which was a campaign in 1942, which was a call to action to get farmers to grow hemp for war efforts. So at the time, the Marijuana Tax Act had been passed 5 years prior. It really deterred farmers from growing hemp. And so they had pretty much stopped. And by 1942, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, knowing that we needed hemp because the Philippines had been conquered, which was our primary source of Manila hemp, actually, which is what we were using for rope and parachute webbing and things like that. So after that happened, we knew that we had to find a domestic source to be able to supplement that market. And so the USDA found that hemp was the ideal crop for that. So they sparked that Hemp for Victory campaign, and it removed the tax from production. So farmers weren't able to pay that additional hefty fee. And then it allowed them, the campaign educated them how to grow it and how to weave it into these materials and process it. And so this is a kind of a similar initiative in that we as a nation and really a world have all experienced these really devastating impacts from COVID. You know, there's all kinds of resources that are in short supply, similar to World War II. And so Hemp for Future has allowed the industry to come together, organizations, small to large, including businesses, are donating either their time or their marketing exposure or physical products or financial contributions to Friends of Hemp and this campaign. And we are facilitating these donations to various entities. For instance, we worked with Victory Hemp Foods and a food manufacturer in Kentucky, and they donated several hundred pounds of hemp hearts to food banks and nutrition programs in four different Kentucky counties. Hmm. We've worked with several different CBD companies, including Curaleaf, Fusion CBD, Nanocraft CBD, which is actually facilitated by CBD Takeout, to provide hand sanitizers without CBD, plus lip balm, salves, and other topicals to professional nursing organizations in Massachusetts and New York. And we've also facilitated a donation of over 200 items of hemp clothing from Colorado Hemp Company to the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. So what Great. We found is a lot of these companies are, especially manufacturing companies, have, you know, lines, manufacturing line that they're able to turn over into things like hand sanitizer. And they're using their current operations to be able to fulfill the short supply of hand sanitizer on the market. So we're helping to work with those companies to be able to distribute these essential items to communities.
Well, that's something
we're looking for no CBD in hand sanitizer.
And I think hand sanitizer is something that everybody's looking for right now. So that's a hot demand product.
Definitely. And, you know, lotion is the same. So many, you know, people are washing their hands so much now and using hand sanitizer, which dries your hands. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So, you know, lotion is a huge market right now for in that regard as well.
So and how long has Friends of Hemp been around?
Since 2016.
Oh, okay. And where do you plan to take this? Obviously, you guys are doing a lot of great things. I know Jamie Campbell Petty is involved from Indiana here. Where do you guys plan to take this, and what are some of the goals?
Yeah, Jamie actually just joined Friends of Hemp's board of directors.
Yeah.
So we're excited to have her on board.
She's got her finger in everything. If it comes
when it
was involved in hemp, yes.
Yeah. So, in the future, we're hoping that this not only helps these communities that have been devastated by COVID, but also helps bring the industry together. This is really one of the first campaigns that the industry can get behind under a single common goal besides legalization. And even legalization was kind of like a fight to get to that point. You know, it seemed like organizations all wanted, and people all wanted credit for the legalization, whereas this is something where we can get together and work as one in unity to help these different communities. And then I think it also not only provides that, but it also helps to educate the general public that, you know, hemp is not just CBD. Hemp is so much more than that. And it's really been lost in the last several years because people, I mean, I was talking to this individual the other day. I'd met in an elevator prior to COVID, and I was talking to him, and he said, "Oh, where do you work?" And I said, "Oh, I work in the hemp industry." And he goes, "The what?" And I said, "You know, CBD." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I know what that is." And so it's like, CBD is such a buzzword. It's really taken over the hemp market.
Right.
And people still don't really know what hemp is. And what this does is it allows us to open the doors to say, hey, hemp is not just CBD. It's also food. It's also clothing. We can also make lotions out of it. We can do so much more with it. And I think that this will allow us to do that. And while, you know, right now we're looking at facilitating donations, I think we'll also be able to highlight some of the interesting and unique things that people are doing in the industry that are still in R&D phases for things like COVID. I was talking with an individual the other day who has been doing research at Eastern Kentucky University. He's got this very unique water filter that's made out of hemp fiber, and he is applying for a research grant to be able to turn that water filter into an N95 mask.
Oh, wow. Annie, tell us where folks can get more information about you personally, how they can get in touch with you, and also how they can get in touch with Friends of Hemp.
Yeah, so Friends of Hemp, you can visit friendsofhemp.org and find out everything about the campaign, join the initiative. You can donate, you can contribute your voice, make a financial donation, and really just spread the word about the initiative. And then you can join the initiative just through some links that are directly on friendsofhemp.org. For me, you can really find out about my life's work on thinkhempythoughts.com. It's like Think Happy Thoughts, but hempy.
Okay, Hempy Thoughts. Okay.
Yeah. And that is my link for basically everything that I've been doing in the industry since 2009. So you can see the different companies that I've founded and the podcasts that I've been working really hard on, which I haven't published in like a year and a half. Sorry, listeners.
Oh, you got to get those out. People want to hear that.
Yeah, it's a tough podcast because it's really a story that I've been writing, and I've had a little bit of a writer's block since the Farm Bill passed, plus been a little busy trying to kickstart these other businesses. So,
see, I always have writer's block, but I never have speaker's block. I can, you just start talking and it just starts flowing, you know?
Right.
All right, Annie. So again, that was friendsofhemp.org.
Yes.
Okay. And then it was thinkhempythoughts.com.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. So those two, there are two ways there that you can get a hold of Annie. Annie Rouse, founder of Friends of Hemp. Annie, we really appreciate you being on the program. Got a lot of information from you today. Some interesting stories, some interesting information as well. We hope we can have you back on the program sometime soon.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.